I'm Casey.
And I'm Joe.
And this is our podcast, Four Letter Town.
A podcast about faith, creativity, and small town life.
All right, so we're here with Lauren Cunningham. Lauren and I met each other actually right before the pandemic hit, and like 2 months before, so we got to meet each other in person in Seattle, but neither of us are from Seattle, and that was my first time in Seattle, maybe Lauren's first time as well.
Yeah, first time.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So we met at a creative ministry conference, and we were both speakers speaking about ministry in creative ways, and we'll actually be learning more about Lauren's ministry and her work through this conversation. So, Lauren, can you introduce yourself to the audience in any way that you've always wanted to introduce yourself to an audience?
Yeah, I think, first off, thank y'all for having me on your podcast, and congratulations on just doing this and having this out here for folks. So, as a singer, the first thing that comes to mind is like, let me sing something, but I don't, I also realized that we have some audio limitations just because we're having to virtually gather. But I really appreciate that freedom to introduce myself in any way. Yeah.
I think you're just let the spirit flow. The spirit says sing. You just sing.
Yeah. I would like folks to know that I am from Kentucky. And I grew up in Louisville, and I'm a preacher's kid, grew up in the Black Baptist Church. I would like, folks to know that I am a Black queer woman of faith, and that I entered into full-time ministry with the Good Neighbor Movement in January of 2020. And so actually, Casey, when I met you in Seattle, what a gift it was to be there, to meet you, to learn about Wildflower, your partner Joe, and you all's ministry together. And but that was like my first official kind of, I don't know, like conference trip representing the Neighbor Movement with my ministry partner and one of the founding members and pastor, Brandon Rencher. So, yeah, I'm one of four in my family. My father and mother were married for 43 years prior to my father's passing in 2012. And I mentioned that because that was a big life shakeup for me. And so, yeah, and I feel I bring him into every space and my family into every space with me. So, I'm a musician. I'm a singer. I'm a facilitator. My background was in higher education prior to full-time ministry. And I think the last thing I'll say is that I am deeply committed to reclining into ministry as a Black queer woman of faith, in the wholeness and holiness of ministry, just as I am. And so that's what ministry looks like for me, and that's who I am. And I'm I am the newly engaged partner of Allie.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, congratulations.
So, you all this is like 72 hours old at this point. So it happened on Saturday. And so that's pretty big news.
Yeah, it is. Congratulations.
Who I am and where I'm headed, right?
No kidding.
Anyway, so this won't be published publicly for a bit. So we're not doing this interview like live and then publishing it. So you'll be able to tell your audience before this goes out to people. Congratulations, though. That's really awesome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate
that. That's really amazing.
So this podcast is especially about rural and small town life, you know, the The name is Four Letter Town because we used to live in a town that had four letters in it. But it's also like, you know, a little bit of a wink toward, you know, the mix of emotions that people experience in small town and rural life. So I'm just curious, what's been your experience of small town and rural life?
All right. Well, I think my experience, I have to kind of reach back to my pre-North Carolina days in Bowling Green, Kentucky. So like I said, I grew up in Louisville, but Bowling Green is about an hour and a half south of Louisville. And that's where I went to school at Western Kentucky University. And I'm a two-time graduate of WKU and proud Hilltopper. But I also got to work for the university for 10 years and put down roots in Bowling Green for 15. And so that's my, when you say small town, that's what comes to mind was my time.
And so I think, I don't know if you remember this, Lauren, but when I first met you, we were getting in the car to go to the church in Seattle, and you mentioned Bowling Green. I was like, I grew up really close to Bowling Green. And so I feel like that's how I connected to you. And to me, Bowling Green was a big town from Portland, Tennessee.
But the county surrounding Bowling Green.
Rural.
But
Joe and I was talking about before we got you on camera. It's like, would you consider Bowling Green rural or not? And it is rural. It's we've been studying a lot of what rural actually means. And there's lots of ways to define it. But Bowling Green is definitely, it's a larger rural town, but it's rural. So thanks for stating that.
Yeah, and Bowling Green experienced significant growth in the 15 years that I lived there. From the time I moved there in the year 2000, it was way more rural than when I left in 2015.
Okay.
And so it was cool to see that journey of Bowling Green, becoming a little less rural for a lot of the surrounding counties.
But it's really fascinating to be in a place and just see it evolve and grow. What I know about Bowling Green, and you might can challenge me on this, but it's kind of welcoming. It's welcomed a lot of people not from the area and immigrants. And I think there's refugees as well, right? It's a refugee
Town. Settlement location. I was just gonna affirm what you were offering, that I feel like Bowling Green had a very welcoming spirit about it. And being a refugee resettlement location, having a university that is kind of anchors the city with students coming from all over. But a lot of students coming from like a 50-mile radius of WKU, being less than an hour up the road from Nashville, and being a city that had several different industries, from the Corvette Museum and GM plant to WKU, bringing in faculty and staff and students from all over. But then also I think Fruit of the Loom was there, or is there, and so a lot of people make their way to Bowling Green. So it's nestled in a nice little in-between space. You have Nashville further south, you have Louisville further north, and a lot of amazing small towns in between.
So making how people made their way to Bowling Green, how did you make your way to Bowling Green? Why did you choose there?
So WKU was the reason I chose to be in Bowling Green as a student, as an 18-year-old. But while I was in high school in Louisville, I went to DuPont Manual High School, and it's a magnet school, and I was in the communications magnet. And so the summer before my senior year in high school, I got to visit WKU's campus for a journalism camp that centered minority students. And so because I was in the communication magnet, I learned about the opportunity. I wanted to go into journalism, some form of communications. I kind of nailed down broadcast journalism. WKU, as quiet as it's kept, has an amazing journalism and photojournalism program. When I was in high school, UNC Chapel Hill was up in the like top five, and WKU was kind of hanging with them around their journalism program. So after going to that camp, feeling connected to that campus, meeting people, I just knew WKU was where I wanted to go. And then after graduating with my undergrad degree, I settled down in Bowling Green and started kind of putting down some roots because of my involvement with community. All throughout college, I worked at the Boys and Girls Club and got to meet amazing youths and families that made up our city, and then kind of began to build my own capacity around youth development and community development and young people leading in developing community and creating community. And I met some faculty members who were grant writers and doing amazing community-based work. Yeah, got trained up in some things and made some connections and building relationships. And then when I graduated from WKU in 2005 with my undergrad in broadcast journalism, I was offered an opportunity to help co-create a community-based youth development program, arts program called Kaleidoscope. And I jumped on the opportunity. And so as a program coordinator, I worked on a team to build this program. So it was federally funded, and so it was kind of like this pot of money to address some regional issues, and youth and the arts was one of the identified regional issues. Yeah, we got to build a program from the ground up, from mission, vision, core values, recruiting the young people, developing the class, hiring folks. I mean, all of that good stuff. And so that's what took me to Bowling Green, and that and Kaleidoscope ended up being what kept me there for a long time.
That's awesome. That's a really great story as well. But I think it's what goes into my next question about community and what mm-hmm. you do now with community. So I feel like you said that you learned some stuff, gained some skills, and mm-hmm. what I know of you now, I met you now, and you live in North Carolina and run this awesome ministry with some other awesome people as well. And y'all really focus on community. So you're an organizer, an advocate, and healer for the Black mm-hmm. and LGBTQIA+ community. Can you tell us some more about spirituality in all of these communities and where you see community yeah. show up? Just talk to us about all of that.
Yeah, so Kaleidoscope really shaped how I live in the world and show up in the world today. And I say that because as a preacher's kid, of course, I was shaped to believe and to understand church as something that happens in a building, right? You go to the church, you do things in the church. And I was raised in the church, and so I did that stuff. And I was also radically curious about what happens outside the church. And so community development and ministry outside of the four walls, but resting with people within community has always been a part of just who I am. It was a big part of my father's ministry. And so, yeah, his ministry work in the world and my family's ministry work in the world. So Kaleidoscope agitated me even more deeply about what it meant to be the church. I don't know if you all are familiar with Tracy Chapman, her song Change. Yeah. And the song says, there's a line in there that says, what if everything you think you know makes your life unbearable, would you change? And then there's another line in there that says, if you saw the face of God in love, would you change? Kaleidoscope was church for me. Mm-hmm. And I was being shepherded by these young folks, by these young, Black, brown, working class, marginalized young people, multiple days a week. And it just broke my heart open to reimagine what it means to be the church, what it means to join God in the neighborhood. And that is still a part of my core. And what led me and continues to lead me in ministry in Greensboro with Good Neighbor Movement. Our mission is to join God in the neighborhood, whatever that may look like, to be in community with people, because that's where we believe Jesus is. That's where we believe Spirit is working in between us. So yeah, my work now is rooted in community. Good Neighbor Movement, it has a decentralized structure. So we meet in small groups. We don't have a building. Prior to the pandemic, we would meet in public spaces. This afternoon, I'll be meeting a group of folks in a public space. I'm working with an initiative here called Healing Ground, the Healing Ground Collective. And we launched a winter waiting collective care circles that are taking place for the next couple of Tuesdays at 3:30 here in Greensboro. And so yeah, I mean, just to kind of round that out, I have been reshaped and challenged to rethink what I thought I knew. And continue to rethink what I think I know about what it means to be the church, who is holy, who we honor. And that work has led me to be in the community, to work with marginalized populations, to follow the leadership of people in the LGBTQ community, the Black community, from women, and from just so many other teachers and guides in my life. And so injustice in our justice work is central to that too. I mean, so yeah, that's what I'm doing now. And that's how that small town, Bowling Green, shaped me to be here today.
Wow. That's so cool. And, you know, honestly, having lived in a big city, Casey and I both lived in Chicago for a time, and I found that, like, actually, like, a lot of neighborhoods kind of feel like small towns, just really close together, you know, without the wide open spaces between them that most small towns have. But I also love that you're talking about your justice work, because I'm really curious about that sort of thing. I'm hearing some very familiar terms, stuff about being agitated and working with marginalized folks. I'd love to hear some more about, you know, what you have been working on, maybe how you had to pivot in the middle of the pandemic. And then we had this whole election thing. I mean, there's so much there. So what y'all got going on?
Yeah, great question. So yeah, Joe, you are right. We had to pivot hard turn once the pandemic hit. Number one, the way that we gather, we meet in small groups, because Good Neighbor Movement is structured by these spiritually rooted, this network of spiritually rooted groups called city villages. And so we have city villages that are neighborhood based, and we have city villages that are rooted in some form of social location, you know. And the way these groups gather is physically getting together in homes, coffee shops, local parks. Yeah, all sorts of places. So, of course, when the pandemic hit and we shifted our operations online, like most folks, we had to be really thoughtful about the way we were gathering. And, of course, we used the heck out of Zoom like everyone else. But But we've also had to be thoughtful about what we do when we gather, because what really matters right now. And so we've really, I guess, you know, focused our work, I guess, two things to raise around the justice work, not only with the pandemic, but with the uprisings around police brutality. Mm-hmm. And then how do we co-create spaces that hold people in this moment and beyond, where people can attend to their own emotions, but then also organize with other people to act. Mm-hmm. So faith in action. And so what we've been up to? Well, we've held spaces like Collective Day of Grief. Mm-hmm. And the Collective Day of Grief happened, April or May. So not far soon after the shutdowns, right? And that was a coalition that was put on by a coalition of organizations here on the East Coast, but then also with friends and partners out on the West Coast, in Oakland, California. And so it was an opportunity for us to attend to the grief, attend to the loss. And then in June, we worked with a group of organizers, young, new organizers who had been activated by the uprisings and the George Floyd's death, and to put on Blackout NC in partnership with some seasoned organizers. And it ended up being the largest public demonstration the city of Greensboro has ever seen.
Oh, wow.
There are over 5,000 folks who attended. And Good Neighbor Movement, we were able to provide leadership and support in the area of healing. Mm-hmm. So we had a whole team that was coordinated of community healers, clergy, you know, alternative healing practitioners, and that was amazing. That was absolutely amazing. And we had like licensed professionals, clinicians there, and we were able to serve communion. So we did a public communion. Anyone could participate, and several of our members led in providing ritual, and I was able to sing. I sang the Black National Anthem, and that was incredibly meaningful. And so, yeah, those are two gatherings around justice and healing that I really feel, yeah, I just feel excited about offering this conversation, because it was, it felt like us really showing up in a meaningful way in a time when our community needed to be together. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
That's wonderful. Those are, they sound like really beautiful events. Thanks for sharing all of that. So, mm-hmm. You found healing through these events. Is that correct?
I did. And continue to find healing and rest with some of the other projects that we have going on. I guess, you know, Joe, when you asked, like, what are you all up to? We're having conversations with neighborhoods. So some of our city villages are having listening projects where we are checking in on our neighbors. How are you doing? We have mutual aid projects that are emerging through and in partnership with some of our city villages. Healing Ground is a partnership with Good Neighbor Movement, a local organization called Pause Breathe, Connect, and another local and a local church. So yeah, we're out and about creating these pockets of resistance and healing and action. We're working on a campaign now with, we're a member of the Greensboro Justice Coalition. And in 2018, a young man, Marcus Deion Smith, who was experiencing homelessness and a mental and emotional kind of meltdown crisis in the moment, was killed by Greensboro police because he was hogtied and went into cardiac arrest. And so it was ruled a homicide by the state medical examiner, but there's been no accountability. And so we are pushing the city of Greensboro to hold not only those involved accountable, but to also settle with the Smith family. That is a campaign that we're actively involved in. And so, yeah, to loop back to your question, Casey, just around what, yeah, is this bringing me healing? Yes, it is. It is. And I know we're in the season of Advent right now, and what I deeply grapple with is how am I actively waiting? Mm. Not just waiting, but what does it mean to actively wait with my community? And so, yeah, for me right now, this is what it looks like. This is what it looks like for me, and it's deeply healing.
That is so beautiful and so important right now when, you know, we have just so much hurt, so much injury, so much sickness throughout our country and world going on everywhere, but especially to Black bodies. Man, it's so incredibly, incredibly important. That's something I'm thinking about now is, you know, how, well, it, you know, the way that I know, country life, you know, rural life is the rural North, which is by and large a very white space. But I know from visiting Casey's family down Tennessee and elsewhere that rural looks a little bit different down South. So what I guess I'm trying to put a question together right now about what does justice look like in rural spaces, especially for people of color and other, you know, marginalized folks in rural areas.
And I guess I would add to that, how are you guys with the Good Neighbor Movement reaching rural communities, if you do at all, involved with your justice work?
Yeah. That's a really good question about the neighbor movement and rural communities. Yeah, you know, I mean, our focus is Greensboro, right? And local communities here. And we have folks connected to our work who are doing really meaningful work in rural areas, bringing folks together, having conversations. Right now, some of the other work that I'm doing outside of Good Neighbor Movement is with a program called Disciples of Welcome. It is centering the United Methodist Church and pastors who are working in rural areas, and exploring this idea of what it means to be beloved, the beloved community, what it means to offer radical hospitality, right? And so, yeah, I am, I served as a retreat designer for Disciples of Welcome, and this program is being coordinated by Faith Matters Network, which is in Nashville, and a womanist organization led by women of color. And so, yeah, work being done in rural communities we are connected to. So Brandon and I both have worked as peer facilitators. And then, like I said, I worked as a retreat designer with Faith Matters Network. And so we've been having conversations with pastors and clergy and faith leaders in rural areas of North Carolina. But like, when I think about my time in Bowling Green and what conversations, what opportunities existed to have these deep, agitational, inoculating combos, there weren't many. There weren't many. And when it comes to race relations in these rural areas, I just think we have an uphill climb. And one, I think sometimes some of the biggest challenges is just getting folks in the same room. Mm-hmm. Inviting folks into a deeper conversation about their own stories and how their stories have shaped the way they view the world, have shaped the way they engage with others. And so, you know, this is where our partnership and work with Faith Matters Network, invite folks in to these conversations, to these storytelling moments that help us to see each other, to be able to reach for each other. And I'm also in a state, I come from two states that have shaped me. I currently live in a state that some folks try to say purple, but no, we're a red state politically. And it shows up in our local politics, our state politics and local politics. And then Kentucky is a super red state. And so while, you know, on the justice front, we've been fighting for justice for Marcus Smith, you know, in Louisville, my home city, they're still fighting for justice for Breonna Taylor, right, and so many others who have not been named. So, you know, I think just zooming out, broad stroke, 2020 has unveiled a lot about who we are, and it provides us an opportunity to reimagine who we're going to be. And so, we have a long way to go. And I'm grateful to be involved in work with other Black and Brown folks, and with white folks who are committed to dismantling white supremacy and living anti-racist lives, you know, and that just takes listen, work. We all doing the work, and the untangling of and the deep curiosity around what has shaped us and how is it showing up in the world in our relationships. So yeah, I mean, I think in rural communities, there has to be an intentionality to crafting these pockets, these spaces where this can happen. Because if not, if we're left to our own devices, if we're left to our own levels of comfort, then it won't happen.
Yeah, that's good. I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing all of that. Thank you so much.
Thank y'all for allowing me.
That's wonderful. And stuff that I need to hear as well.
I love how we're ending on some stuff about hope. And, you know, when I hear you talk, I'm hearing hope in your stories. And that's so wonderful because, oh my gosh, we need hope so badly right now. So badly. So yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
You are welcome.
So off of that, I think we can find a lot of hope and learn about a lot of hope from the organizations that you've been involved with and that you lead. Mm-hmm. So can you share the names of some of the main ones?
Yeah. So the Good Neighbor Movement is my home. It's where I serve and the community, the alternative faith community that I get to journey alongside. And our website is goodneighbormovement.org, and we're on Instagram at Good Neighbor Movement, and we're also on Facebook. So that's that. I have a website, livingislauren.com, and yeah, that's a hashtag I picked up almost 15 years ago. Again, when I was becoming and coming into like my full self and living my life a lot more authentically and interconnectedly with others. And so livingislauren.com, and on livingislauren.com that you can check out music there, because there's a music page. And Lauren Cunningham Music on Facebook. Living as Lauren is my handle on Instagram. So I'm all out there. I have music on Spotify right now, an album I recorded back in 2012 called Sunday Sessions. And that's some music that's out there. But yeah. And, you know, Joe and Casey, again, thank you all for your support of me, because my work with Good Neighbor Movement is missional ministry, and so I do fundraising to support my full-time work with them, and I'm grateful to have you all as supporters of mine, so thank you. And I am very hopeful about the future. I think that the more we can take leadership from those marginalized folks in the world, I think there's a lot of wisdom in their experiences. And I honestly just feel like that's what it means to join God in the neighborhood. Or as Tracy Chapman said, you know, seeing the face of God in love. That's where I see it. And I'm hopeful about where we're headed together.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And I'm hopeful also because I have friends like you. Thank you. Well, have fun at your event.
Thanks so much. I'm headed there now. Get there. Y'all have a good rest of your afternoon, okay?
You too.
You too. All right. Peace.
Thank y'all. Congratulations again.
Thanks, y'all. Peace.
Bye. And here's a special treat for you. From Lauren's album, Sunday Sessions, her song Moment. You can find the whole song at Lauren's website, laurencunninghammusic.com. And while you're there, buy the whole album.
If I was a bird, where would I fly? Where would I go? If I wrote a song, what would it say, or how would it go? It's all about the moments, it's all about the things that make this life so livable, that makes you change you. If I saw you hurt, would I stop to lend a hand? This life is a metaphor from the beginning to the end. It's all about the moment. Keeping down. moment. Our lives should be the sound, the infinite call to take a stand. It's all about the moment. Change the world, change the song.